from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Trump administration is ending temporary protective status for about 200,000 at least Salvadorans who have been allowed to work and live in the United States since 2001. Many of those immigrants fled to escape violence during the 1980s and 90s and were granted TPS in 2001 after a pair of devastating earthquakes struck El Salvador. The protected status will end in September of next year, and we're going to discuss the impact of the Salvadoran community in the Bay Area and the impact of this nationally. Ramon Cardona is with us. He's director of the Centro Latino Caucasian Community-Based Immigration Agency. Welcome to the program.
Michael, good morning.
Good morning to you. And let me begin with you, Ramon, and let's just talk about the effect this is having. We're talking about people who have been here in some instances is 17 years. This has been extended 11 times. And we're also talking about people who, for the most part, are employed, paying taxes, have families, children.
Definitely. We have a 190,000 Salvadorians, a average of 22 to 24 years of already living in the United States, an average of 16 to 18 years old when they came into the United States. They have become very much enrooted into this country. A third of them are paying, you know, their own mortgages. 12% of them are self-employed, have businesses providing jobs to others. And, you know, and amongst one of the things that is going to create, what I deem a humanitarian crisis come September 2019, when they have to decide what to do, leave, stay under the shadows again. You know, they have 192 U.S.-born children who are also bearing the brunt of this anguish, from this shocking news that we got yesterday.
And who cannot, even though they are citizens, the children, if they were born here,
they can't
apply for visas for their parents until they're at least 21 years of age.
Exactly. They got to become 21 years of age to get the legal rights so that they can sponsor their parents for adjustment of status to permanent residency.
Well, Vanessa Velasco is a Salvadoran immigrant living under TPS, and we want to talk to her about what she's experiencing, and good to have you with us. Ms. Velasco, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I guess the real question to you is how this is affecting you and how this is affecting your family.
Well, you know, it's just this just coming check the whole world. It's like it's not just us as a TPS beneficiary, it's just kids. It's like a all of life come just to almost first time. By September 2019, it will be, you know, an end here. It's like, as you said, we cannot go back to the shadows. It's hard when you have, when you've been living here 17, 18 years legally with everything. We own mortgages. We have a driver's license. We take our kids to different places. This, the other, have come. Suddenly, we're just going to stop our lives. So it's really hard. We were preparing for the announcement emotionally, but now it's like we want to put all our strength in trying to find a legal way to, you know, to stay here with the kids.
Well, I hope you can, and I appreciate very much your being with us this morning, and I wish you buena suerte. Thank you for joining us. Let me go back to Ramon Cardona, who is here with us in studio, directs again the Centro Latino
Cuscatlan.
Cuscatlan. I looked at that first and I misread it. I'm sorry. Cuscatlan, community-based immigration. There's a lot of money going back to El Salvador, too. About 17%, I read, of the economy in El Salvador is money.
Gross domestic product in El Salvador is made up by 17% of all the remittances Salvadorians send to our country. Last year, it was $4.5 billion. And if you consider that the national budget is $5 billion, it's quite considerable. So for all these Salvadorians, TPSs who send above $600 million per year, you know, it's a good percentage, and it's going to have, quite a bad economic impact and destabilize. The U.S. Homeland Security stated that El Salvador is in conditions now to integrate them. You know, these tens of thousands of Salvadorians who must return to the country, once they revert back to an undocumented status because TPS is totally gone. But El Salvador has no conditions whatsoever to, have the capacity in a normal way to integrate thousands of its people.
Well, you've also got an economic hit here in the United States because many of these Salvadoran people are working in construction, they're doing childcare. I mean, it's going to definitely have an effect on this economy. But here's what the Department of Homeland Security says, and I'd like to get your response, Ramon. They're saying essentially that this was temporary to begin with. That's what it's called, a temporary program, and that it was done in wake of the earthquake. And there have been other, certainly, humanitarian efforts that were temporary and people were sent back. Bosnia, for example, Liberia during the Ebola crisis.
Yes.
So the roads, the hospitals, the schools, the water supplies, Department of Homeland Security, in other words, the infrastructure in El Salvador, they say, is now built up enough that we can send these people back.
Then it should have been done, you know, within 2 to 3 years once the program was enacted, if you're really going to call it temporary. But that was not the case, because study after study showed that, you know, El Salvador, and it goes the same with Haiti and Honduras, you know, which are faring the same
Honduras fate. Hasn't been yet. Honduras is going to be. Haiti and
Nicaragua.
And Nicaragua, yeah.
Yes, you know, programs there have already been eliminated. One more time, you know, the high levels of violence in El Salvador and Honduras, the chronic unemployment, the lack of adequate housing, health, running water, electricity. I mean, so many issues that are going to that are already affecting the reality and conditions in El Salvador. And then on top of that, in a very small, impoverished country, you're going to have tens of thousands of people being imposed on that society. It's just going to create more instability rather than the, you know, as we already mentioned, the positive economic resource through remittances, the exchanges that are happening between the Salvadorans in the United States and El Salvador and many other you know, positive assets of it. So what we think should be done, it's that, you know, U.S. Congress should look at this situation and see that these are, you know, people.
Well, there are four bills in Congress right now.
There are. And we know that, you know, that's a challenge we have for the next month. How to, you know, get them to move, to see that these are very working, productive people in the United States. Every 18 months, we go through a FBI vetting. Anyone that, you know, falls under the cracks of committing a crime, it's out. They don't have any benefits. So these people have, you know, over 18 years now been, you know, gone through every 18 months. Pain.
Lose their jobs, lose their medical benefits, possibly lose their children, or at least are split up from their children.
Some are retired already, getting Social Security, you know, which they earned. They're going to lose that because, you know, without a lawful status, you cannot get that benefit.
But do you think that a Republican Congress is going to be open to allow people to apply for permanent status?
It's a hard one, but we have no choice but to work on that. And we already have a precedent when permanent residency was provided to TPSs. The first TPS was given in 1991 to Salvadorans fleeing the gross human rights violations because of the civil war at the time. And then in late 1997, Bill Clinton signed into law the Nicaraguan and Central American Relief Act, which provided permanent residencies to Central Americans. So we have precedents where Congress has acted and, you know, provided a permanent relief to people in this sort of situation.
We're going to continue this discussion. Some 50,000 Salvadorans living right here in California are going to lose their protected status. And we do want to welcome our listeners to this conversation. And let me give out a number you can join us at. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. If you have some thoughts or if you have some reflections that you'd like to bring to the conversation, we do welcome your involvement. You can join us at that number, 866-733-6786, or you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website and post questions or comments there, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. And I want to bring Cindy Carcamo into this. She's an immigration reporter with the LA Times. Cindy Carcamo, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
I guess the real question to you, especially since there's so many El Salvadorans here in California, is how this is uprooting people's lives now. I mean, we have a president who has linked Haitians as being mostly identifiable, in his mind at least, with AIDS, and Salvadorans identify with the gangs. And there are certainly many gangs both in El Salvador and some gang members here. But a lot of these people, most of these people, are hardworking people who see themselves as Americans, don't they?
Sure. Yeah. Well, you see, the situation is that, you know, it's temporary protected status, and the intent is for it to be temporary. But for a long time, numerous times, the government extended that temporary status. So a lot of Salvadorans felt like this was going to go on for quite some time, and they saw it as a permanent sort of thing. So people bought homes, they had children here, they invested a lot of their money and basically their lives in this whole idea of the United States and living their American dream, opening up businesses, buying cars. A lot of them really became part of the community. And so this kind of came as a blow to them, and they were really taken aback by this. And I asked them, you know, well, it's temporary protected status. A lot of the people that I spoke with, isn't that, you know, that's temporary. What made you believe that this would be something that would go on for a long time? And they thought that it was because, you know, the government had sent them this, like, mixed message. For a long time, it had been extended.
Well, 11 times. 11 times, actually. Yeah, sorry.
Yes, many, many times, numerous times. And the situation has only gotten worse in El Salvador, not in regards to the earthquakes, the initial reason for TPS, but the violence, especially the gangs. And so, you know, they kind of saw the United States as really their home, and El Salvador had changed so much because of the violence, it's almost unrecognizable for a lot of the people who now live here.
But this was not, I'm sorry, Sydney, but this was, like you say, set up as a temporary program. There was no pathway to citizenship.
Yes.
It was always understood
yes.
that it was supposed to be temporary. And as I said, there were other places, one thinks of, as I said, Bosnia, Guinea, Sierra Leone, where people were sent back, Nicaragua. So I wonder if Salvadorans can really see themselves here as being, well, worthy of or somehow demanding in any way special treatment.
Yeah, well, you know, some of them bring up, you know, the situation and the violence right now in El Salvador and how it, you know, some of them brought out that the U.S. is, you know, implicit in that in regards to some of these gangs started actually in the United States in the streets of Los Angeles, like MS-13. And during the 90s, there were mass deportations of these gang members, and they got sent back to El Salvador, and it only strengthened these gangs. They became, you know, they became these huge international gangs. So, you know, it's very complicated, especially the relationship between the United States and El Salvador, given the Civil War, and then later, you know, deportation of gang members, which was a gang that was actually, you know, was brought up in the United States in the streets of L.A., specifically MS-13, and how the deportation of these gang members actually strengthened the gangs and made the situation worse in-country in El Salvador. And that's kind of pushed and led to, you know, this exodus now. This is apart from the TPS, but of people from El Salvador fleeing for their lives toward the United States. And that's why we have this other situation in regards to refugees. So, I mean, it's very complicated. And some people, who I spoke with who have TPS now have brought up that situation in particular, how, you know, the United States has some kind of is complicit in this idea of these transnational gangs now. So.
Well, I'm going to bring our callers into this. And
sure.
Before I do, I'd like a quick response, if I may, from you, Ramon Cardona, about the gangs. Trump administration has talked about the ties to MS-13 of many of the refugees from El Salvador. The ACLU actually sued the administration over that, as I'm sure you're well aware. But two times the number were deported in 2017 from the year prior. And there is a gang problem. I mean, here in San Francisco, the Bologna father and son were killed by someone who thought they were other gang members and shot them to death.
Big problem here.
So how much should this overshadow or be a part of the whole calculus of what we're talking about?
Well, although crime has reduced in El Salvador, according to last year's stats, it's still, right now, the most violent country throughout Latin America.
Yeah, but it's the highest murder rate in the Western Hemisphere. I'm not talking about El Salvador. I'm talking about the concern over people who are gang members here from El Salvador.
That's a very tiny minority, and, you know, unfortunately, it is used to try to generalize stereotypes which do not go with reality. Study after study show, you know, how a majority in this case, you know, the sector of people that we're talking about, temporary protection status recipients, TPSs, are, you know, most of the productive sectors in the working force, 88%, you know, latest, set up, you know, businesses, very, very good at working, not just at one place, many of them, you know, at two different places. So a good moral character, because every 18 months the FBI has to vet them to be able to maintain their TPS benefits. So what more, you know, does one want in terms of, you know, very good, positive group of people producing, collaborating, enriching society in general, the economy? They've earned, after, you know, 22 years in the United States, they earn a lawful permanent status.
All right, I want to get to our callers, and let me do that right now with you, Taylor. Javier, you're on the air.
Oh, thanks for having me. Sure. So I'm in San Francisco, and I want to start off by saying I am not a Trump supporter, but I don't believe that this is a negative thing. In fact, this is reverse brain drain. Everything your caller just said about the positive things of hardworking Salvadorians, educated Salvadorians, they're going to take that back home and invest and make their country great again. Then that's a pun intended. But the thing is just as those criminals came here and they became very, very good criminals in the United States, we need those business people to go back and actually invest in their country and help El Salvador. So that's my opinion.
Yeah, well, I thank you for your opinion. Of course, the chancellor of El Salvador has been importuning and pleading with the Trump administration not to have them sent back. But the caller has a point, and I'm glad he said it. Here's Debbie. Debbie, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. My brother-in-law was working for the Peace Corps in El Salvador 2 years ago, and the United States government demanded that they all come back immediately because the United States government had declared El Salvador as the most dangerous place on the planet. So it seems to me that if you're going to be sending these people back, yes, they came because of an earthquake, quote-unquote, but they also had horrible, horrible murder squads. And my brother-in-law, actually, some of the murder squads came to his city where he was working in eastern El Salvador to take young little boys with them, to recruit them. And they ended up, and I shouldn't be saying, they, not my brother-in-law, but the people of the city ended up taking those people away and disposing of them so they couldn't take their little boys away. So I think if you're going to send these people back to El Salvador, you're sending a lot of them to be killed. And I think that's wrong.
All right. I thank you again for your opinion, and we'll let that stand. I want to read some opinions and thoughts that are coming in from listeners. And certainly many of us remember the death squads that were going on in El Salvador during the Civil War. And Noel writes, no one is talking about the El Salvador Civil War in the 80s, which the United States supported with aid. Ever since then, the violence is rampant. The economy is not good. Let's have a Marshall Plan for El Salvador so Salvadorans will want to build and improve their country. But Bill asks, back in 2001, how long was this temporary residency expected to last? A comment on that, Cindy Carmo?
Hello?
Yeah, Cindy, let me go back to you on this. How long was this temporary residency, Bill asks, supposed to last? 2001?
Well, it was temporary, so not very long. The issue is that the government kept extending it. And that kind of sent mixed messages to the Salvadoran community that had TPS. And I want to get back to what your caller said about the brain drain, and he raises a really good point. The issue, though, is that most of the people that I've spoken with who have TPS from El Salvador are making no plans of returning. They would rather, work under the table and, just be here clandestinely without legal status than to return because the situation in El Salvador is so bad. So I don't know, the whole idea of returning these people back and having them, you know, kind of start their own businesses and things of that sort. They don't see themselves doing that. They're only going to leave if they're forcibly removed from the people that I've spoken with. And that seems to be the consensus.
Now, Cindy Garcamo, again, is immigration reporter with the LA Times. Let me just read a few more comments. A tweet from Io who says, this is a disgusting and decidedly anti-small business move by Trump. It seems like re-registration may be a ploy to make more lists. Despicable. Gene writes, this will destabilize El Salvador and present a security problem for the USA. This administration thinks they are playing checkers instead of chess. Ramon Cardona, are you going to say something here?
Yes. Going back to 2001, those who at that time qualified for temporary protection status were given 18 months. But then the U.S. government also studies every 18 months the conditions of that country and to, you know, conclude whether or not that country is ready to take back its nationals. And the situation has been for 11 times.
Department of Homeland Security. They said now it's ready, yes?
Yeah, they've changed it, but, you know, we don't think they changed it because of the facts and the conditions in country, but
you think
rather
it's political.
It is political, yeah.
Let me bring on more of our callers, and let's go next to you. Carl, thank you for waiting. You're on.
Hi. Yes, I'm with the San Francisco Living Wage Coalition, and just speaking to the serious economic blow that this would be to the economy in the United States, we are in the, you know, in the midst of a severe labor shortage. And losing this many workers, deporting this many workers, is going to be a huge impediment to economic growth in this country. Even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is against this very ideological anti-immigrant move. And the message to the Republican Party should be that they will go the way of the Republican Party in California because of Prop 187 if Congress does not take action and save TPS and provide a pathway to permanent residency for these workers.
All right, Carl, I appreciate hearing from you. And we might add that there are many cities, some of them just north of here in Santa Rosa is a good example, where they need this labor. Houston is talking about the labor after Harvey, rebuilding and all of that. It plays into this in a major way. Anna writes, why would Trump want to destabilize a country and create disruption in so many people's lives? Historically, has there ever been a good outcome from an action like this, Ramon?
Historically, you mean other presidents before?
No, I mean, we mentioned some of the other places, Bosnia, where they were sent back, Liberia, Sierra Leone.
The difference is in quantity. We're talking about, 190,000 individuals versus very, very few, 1,000, 1,500 from the other countries from Africa. And even Nicaragua, whose TPS has been ended, it's only 2,500 individuals who had that benefits. In the case of Haiti, yeah, it is
45,000,
close to 60,000.
Yeah. Was it up to 60?
Yes, but they were given 18 months. Just as Salvador has got it right now, so we have not reached that deadline, but we will, and that's what's creating so much anguish in these families. They're asking themselves, what are we gonna do? What's gonna happen to us?
Yeah, let me get another caller on here, and that's Regina. Regina, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Well, thank you. My question is, were the refugees allowed to apply for citizenship in this country?
Yeah, let me go to you on this, Cindy Carcamo.
Unless it was through other means, TPS is a temporary, so there's no pathway to permanent residency, no pathway to U.S. citizenship, unless they were able to find some other ways in regards to, like, maybe marrying a U.S. citizen, and they were able to, fix their status. But even then, that's not guaranteed, and it can take years depending on how you entered originally. So for a lot of these people that I've spoken with, they have tried to look for other ways of fixing their legal status so they wouldn't have to just rely on TPS. And they haven't been able to. So some of them are really stuck in many ways.
Aren't a lot of them going to live illegally?
The people that I've spoken with have told me that they are not going back unless they're forcibly removed, that they are going to just actually, some of them kind of see it as, they're going to be regressing in some ways because they're going to go back to living in the country without authorization. But they're going to stay and they're just going to make it work. I think that's one of the things that people forget about immigrants and people who are unauthorized is that, they're survivors. They're going to make it work no matter what, because they don't want to return to a country that's destabilized, it's very violent, and really they just don't recognize anymore after 2 decades have been away for some of these people. It's not home for them anymore.
Cindy, I know you have to go, but I'd like you to respond, if I could keep you here for a minute, to a listener named Jennifer, who says the United States is one of the only two developed countries in the world to grant citizenship as a birthright. Perhaps we could avoid similar situations in the future by changing our citizenship process. I mean, someone has been covering the immigrant beat for all these, well, you're a veteran of that. What would you say to a listener like Jennifer?
That would be, there have been challenges to that. Obviously, I mean, there has been a movement to get rid of birthright citizenship. And yes, we are one in the few in the world that still has birthright citizenship. However, that would take a constitutional move. It would be challenged in the courts. It would be a whole rigmarole. And then you also have to think that if you do away with birthright citizenship, that would create some kind of chaos with just people who are not immigrants, there are a lot of people in this country who don't have passports. You know, they'd have to prove their citizenship. They'd have to prove that they were born in the U.S. So that would take a lot of paperwork. It would give a lot of work to attorneys, that's for sure. So it's a complicated matter.
Cindy Carcamo, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
Cindy Carcamo is an immigration reporter with the L.A. Times, and Ramon Cardona is here with us in studio. He directs the Centro Latino Cuscatlan community-based immigration agency. What's next, Ramon? I mean, in terms of, this doesn't go into effect for 18 months, so what do you foresee? What do you hope for will change? I mean, you've kind of indicated you'd like Congress to act, but is there going to be any kind of action in terms of affecting the midterm elections, for example?
Strategy-wise, we already mentioned the need to intensify our campaign and have U.S. Congress adopt legislation to have permanent solution to this situation through legal permanent residency. And secondly, we are doing outreach to all these individuals, TPSs, to seek proper legal advice, because under the current immigration laws, maybe a good 10 to maybe even 15% of them might have a little option, whether they were victims of a crime. They could apply for the U visa, a visa petition that was done by another relative years ago. The priority day might be coming up by any time soon. Their children are going to become 21, and that at that time they can sponsor them. There are other means to play by prolongating their time in here, while their children reach the age of 21. There is political asylum. There's cancellation of removal for those who have good moral character, have been over the United States over 10 years. And one
there
of
are
their,
options, you're saying.
There are options, but each individual has to seek proper legal advice in a community agency with an attorney, to be able to study exactly what, the particular situation is. And even if at the current moment they may not have an option, at least they know what to do in case something, the worst of the scenarios happens, there's no more TPS protection, and they are facing charges of deportation. There's still, even at that point, legal remedies to, postpone, prolongate, or seek other means of a solution to their situation.
Ramon Cardona, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. We'll continue, obviously, to monitor and follow this story, but another hour is up ahead. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.